Blog Talk Radio.
And this U.S. Open Monday, the week where golf's toughest test occurs, and that sure seems like what we're shaping up for this week at Oakmont Country Club in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Plum, Pennsylvania, to be precise. We'll be joined in seconds by Ryan Ballinger to preview the U.S. Open in what seems to be an extremely tough setup by the United States Golf Association. We will delve into that and much more. We are also going to talk to Kyle DeMannencore about Game 5 of the NBA Finals. That does see the suspension of Draymond Green, the controversial suspension of Draymond Green, which will have potentially long-lasting effects on this series, depending on how this game works itself out, and if Cleveland can send this series back to Cleveland and back to Ohio for a Game 6, or if Golden State wins this on their home floor tonight and takes care of business, and we see a very happy Draymond Green come in from left field to enjoy the celebration. So that's something which we will have to look at. Kyle will give us his thoughts on the suspension in addition to his thoughts on the series and kind of what has turned the series both in Game 3, which went Cleveland's way, and Game 4, obviously, which went the way of a Golden State to take it, the 3-1 going back to Oakland. This is going to be a tough U.S. Open setup. That's without dispute. That is without any opposite opinion. As it sits right now, I don't see anybody who honestly believes that that under par wins. I don't see anybody that believes how in the world anyone gets to any kind of score better than the 5-over that Angel Cabrera won this championship with in 2007. I think it is that tough a test. It is that tough a setup. And we will see how the world's best prepare and play under it. But I really do think it is that difficult a golf course and that difficult setup for the best players in the world this week. And we will see how they react to Mike Davis' setup and to the conditions. There is rain in the forecast for early in the week. That is something to keep in mind. There is a chance here that we do get some rain on Wednesday and Thursday that could soften it up, and that is something that would lead to a much different test as we get towards the weekend. And obviously the winning score will be different if it does soften up and if guys can go at some pins and go a little lower. We shall see how it presents itself. We will talk to Ryan Ballinger shortly. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, the Golf News Net Podcast Network, whatever it's called these days, and iTunes. We will be back with more in 30 seconds.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man. Lost it all to ALS, muscle wasted disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found. battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-572-1717. Learn more about what SBA is doing to strike out ALS.
Back on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling, and one thing I do want to point out, I want to give a shout out to guy I played against in junior golf, Kevin Foley, who via the mysterious alternate list that is so prominent and prevailing at the U.S. Open, got in today, and got in, hold on a second, who got into the field at Oakmont, technical issues at the wrong time, hold on a second, folks. Okay. Our friend Kevin Foley, who I played against as a junior, and then played collegiately at Penn State, on the Web.com Tour, won on the Web.com Tour, got his PGA Tour card, was at the bottom of the reshuffle, had trouble getting into events, told Tim Rosa for it that he wasn't happy with his work ethic. I couldn't keep on the PGA Tour, and has been struggling ever since on that mysterious alternates list. Got in, and paved his way through that mysterious alternates list to Oakmont. He's not a guy I would pick this week. I don't know how you pick someone like Kevin Foley that is not proven, has not shown at minimum the reps on a tough golf course. And I think this is important, and something that a lot of people are going to miss this week is that if you have not been playing on a tough setup, you are going to be hurt. Because flat out Oakmont with a thick rough around the greens, a thick rough everywhere, frankly, and then fast greens, is a place that you cannot afford to be in. And if you have been playing easy setups where the propensity is to go for birdies and the propensity is to play aggressive, that is not going to hurt your game. Help your game this week. That is not going to be what gets you to the promised land, and that is not going to be what gets you into the winner's circle and hoisting that trophy. You're going to have to play a plodding, strategic game. And if you look at the comments and the videos you've gotten so far, whether it's Graham McDowell or Justin Thomas or Keegan Bradley on Sunday, or the comments from Jordan Spieth today, that over par will for sure win. This is a U.S. Open setup that is going to put a paramount on being accurate. And that accuracy will be tested. That accuracy will be required, and it will help determine the champion. I think as you look at it, and we'll talk more about this tomorrow on a special edition of Teeing It Up, when we look at the winners and possible winners, sleepers, fantasy picks, you know, the whole nine yards. Jason Duffner, a guy who is very even-keeled. I mean, he shot 64 earlier this year at the Career Builder and gave an interview to Steve Sands where he could have shot 94, 64, 74, his house could have been broken into. So much could have happened in Jason Duffner with even keel. That's Jason Duffner at his core. We welcome in from the Golf News Net Radio Network and Yahoo, Mr. Ryan Ballingy. Ryan from Oakmont, how is it out there?
Hey, Jeremy, how are you? Oakmont is great. Day one in the books here. We had Jordan Spieth come through. Dustin Johnson was supposed to come through, then backed out. So he'll come through on Wednesday. Got a good look at the golf course. Did a number of players, and it's shaping up to be a good week, albeit a very tough one.
I'm going to skip to the end first because I think that's how you have to start a discussion on this week. I do not see how anything better than five over wins, and I believe anything from 5 to 10 over, maybe even higher if it's really tough conditions, could be the winning score. Am I crazy?
No. There is a caveat to that, though, and that is the rain that is expected to come here Wednesday, Thursday, even potentially Friday. I think that the USGA is anticipating that happening. And I think if that's their anticipation, they're not going to make this play as firm and as fast as they could. And they're just not going to be able to. So they're going to keep the rough as it is. The fairway will remain a little bit soft, a little bit receptive. By the time we get to the weekend, it'll be more difficult. But for Thursday and Friday, with the rain, I think it'll be fairly soft, fairly scoreable. So I don't know if that's the case, if that weather forecast, if the winning score is closer to even par. If we get a change in the forecast over the next 24 or 48 hours, and that changes, and we don't have anticipation of rain, we expect dry conditions, we expect a little breeze that we had this afternoon, then all of a sudden they can change their setup and approach. And they could bring 5, 6, 7 over par into play. So it really depends on this point what the weather forecast is supposed to be for the next 24 or 48 hours and what the USGA does in anticipation of that, if that actually happens.
The setup is exactly the same as 07. All the changes that have been made were ordered by the club, not by the USGA. This is the exact same golf course. It's relatively short. 7,200 yards. It's not, you know, there's not like some 663-yard behemoth that is going to scare people. There is a 288-yard par 3, which we'll get to in a second. But this is a golf course, Ryan, that if the rough was down, the greens were slower, would not be the bear that it is. And I think the interesting thing, which is going to be on big display here, is that for the first time in 3 years, we are back to chop out U.S. Open rough. You cannot do anything with it. Yet there is graduated rough, correct? And if you're just off fairway, you should be okay. Is that right?
I don't know about okay, but you'll at least be able to advance the ball a little bit, 100, 150, maybe even 200 yards if you're lucky. I think 150 is probably pretty good there. It's still really deep and thick just off the fairway. I mean, it is. You're going from nothing, like carpet, to 2.5 inches. And here, the bent grass is extremely healthy, very thick. It's going to grab the ball anyway. So you're still going to have a hard time advancing the ball how you would like. But once you kind of get well offline and you're in that 4, 5, 6 inch deep stuff, you're not going anywhere. You're going to be lucky to get to the fairway or lucky to get 20 or 30 yards further than where you were. And that's going to make for a tough week. This is definitely a classic-style U.S. Open. This is definitely one of those championships where you're going to invoke the memory of Tom Meeks as the design leader, you know, the setup leader from just before Mike Davis came on in 2006. And so this is going to remind people a lot of a different era of U.S. Open. But that's really the only way you can play this championship here. It's designed, this golf course is designed for that kind of setup. Like you said, I don't necessarily think it would be an easy golf course if there were pretty much just mowed everywhere and there wasn't deep, thick rough. I think the fairway shapes and the tee shot demands are pretty significant, even if you didn't have that much rough. But nonetheless, it would be a lot easier of a challenge for these guys if they didn't have to worry about what looms just a few yards off the fairway.
One of the great secrets of golf that sometimes you a true of until you attend golf events is that hitting it in the crowd sometimes will give you a better lie and a better stance and a better place to advance it than just off the fairway because of the people trampling it down. You were inside and outside the ropes today. Will foul balls be okay? Is there a thought process to, if you have to miss it by 25 yards and you should be all right?
Well, it's kind of like Augusta National. It all comes down to the angle. Obviously, you want to be able to hit the ball. That's job one. Then job two is being able, all right, well, if I blast one into the crowd or if I blast one into a grandstand and I drop into a trampled area, do I have an angle to where I want to go? Or is that blocked out angle to maybe somewhere else on the putting surface or through a neck or something like that? Is that better than the alternative? And if that is, then I think the calculation's pretty clear. Get into the crowd. So I think that is possible. I think that could happen a bunch of times this week. I don't know that these guys will all think that way. I'm sure that there are plenty of egos who will go, oh, well, I can just do it the traditional way and just take my medicine, I'll be fine. But there are going to be people, no doubt in my mind, who think, hey, if I just put it in the grandstand, I get a drop. Let's hit it as hard as I can. And they'll see what they can do from there.
You and I have played golf for a long time, and you and I both have home courses. You and I both know how important comfort with sight lines is. It's a concept that a lot of people who don't play golf don't understand, but knowing what you're hitting at, which sounds simple but is more complicated than it sounds, is so important. Oakmont, as a lot of people will find out this week, has removed a lot of trees. It is a different-looking golf course, even though it is the exact same golf course. As somebody who plays the game yourself, is it a big deal? Is this sight line and aim line changing, or will people be okay still picking out their targets?
I heard a number of people complain last year at Chambers that they didn't, players, that they didn't feel like they had clear sight lines, especially on the elevated holes, because you were teeing off basically towards water, a body of water, and that it was hard to pick out a spot where you wanted to land. It also didn't help that there's basically no true rough. It was a little hard to find your way, especially, of course, you didn't really know all that well. Here you suffer from some of that in places, on 1, 10, 12, 17 because it's blind. I mean, there are some holes where you just don't have a clear sight line, I don't think, and maybe that's part of the difficulty of it. But I think that the sight lines are there if you kind of know where you want to put the ball because there are enough targets. You can fade it off, like, for example, on 12, you could fade it off a bunker to the left that you can clearly see. That's where you want to hit it with a slight fade to hit the cambered fairway and hang on. On 1, it's sloped right to left all the way. You at least have a little tree line to the right. It's okay. Number 10, it's similar to number 1. I think that's probably the one with the least likely sight line, but even still, you can see where the fairway cuts in from the right. So you can aim off of that. So I think the aim points are there if you can see them in your mind. I don't think that they're that hard to see as a golfer. At least I don't think they would be for me. So I don't suspect these guys will have a lot of problems. But other than 17, where it's really hard to pick out a spot from the teeing ground that you feel confident in that you're going to land the ball where you want.
Talking with Ryan Ballengee here about the U.S. Open. Let's now get into picks and kind of who this favors. For me, Ryan, you got to be able to hit it in the fairway, hit it on the green, and even if you're not the best putter, at least know what you're doing when it comes to putting. The guy, sleeper-wise, that jumped into my mind is Jason Duffner. Having been on the ground now for a day, is this a Jason Duffner golf course?
I put him in my fantasy picks today. I think in a video I did for Yahoo Sports, I think he is a great sleeper. He has played extremely well on golf courses that are hard from tee to green this year. He played great at Doral in tough conditions. He played well at Tampa and the Valspar. Did really well on the Copperhead course at Innisbrook. So those are all strikers courses where you've got to put the ball. You've got to be conscientious of where the greens were difficult on both those courses for different reasons than we're going to have this week, but they were difficult. So I think that Jason Duffner, with the way that he strikes the ball, can do very well. He's just long enough. The nice thing about this course, still being 7,230 yards, more or less, from 2007, basically unchanged on the scorecard, is that players hit the ball further. I don't care what the USGA says. Players hit the ball further. And because they hit the ball further, they can take less club off the tee. They can hit a 3-wood, 280 or 290, and not have to concern themselves so much with the rough. And I think that means if you're a good tee-to-green player, you have a good chance this week. You have a really good chance this week. And I think Jason Duffner fits that category pretty well.
In terms of who doesn't, this doesn't seem like a Bubba Watson type setup. If you're a wild driver who hits great recovery shots, it doesn't seem like it's your week.
No, it doesn't. If he can hit the ball straight, comfortably, it wouldn't matter where the ball went. You know, he could power his way out, kind of like Cabrera did in 07, and it would be just fine. But I think Bubba Watson will get easily flustered playing here. I don't think he's going to have a good time, and I think he'll be going home on Friday.
Yeah, me too. Who do you like this week besides Duffner?
Jason Day is an obvious pick. He's obviously the best player in the world right now. Most complete game. Tee to green is fantastic. He hit a 2-iron, 300 yards. Hit a 3-wood, 330 yards. Even if it's soft, he could still do those things. He could find the fairway with them. I think that he is very skilled has the appropriate skill set mentally to handle the rigors of being involved on every single shot. That's why he's a top 15 mainstay in this championship, because even if he is slow, he's locked in when he plays, and take it or leave it, that's better than being quick and kind of out of it. So I think he has a tremendous opportunity to win a second major this week, and I would be somewhat shocked if he's not in it with nine holes to play on Sunday.
Your final score?
283, I think.
Which cut off hand?
This golf course is really hard, but I think 283 is a good score. I think it's gettable to that number. Now, the golf course could change tomorrow, but right now I think 283 is pretty reasonable.
What is 283 in a relation to par?
So that would be what, 3 over par? I think that's kind of right in between the setup styles, where you could kind of massage it to even if it plays soft. I don't think they're going to get this golf course all that firm. I think that rain's going to come. In fact, it looks like it's going to rain right now. So if we get some more moisture around here, it's going to be awfully hard to make this course as difficult as it can be.
Times 4 is 280. So, 283 would be 3 over par. Ryan, have a blast this week. Thanks for coming on Teeing Up. I appreciate it. And get prepared. This is the start of that stretch, the 21-week stretch, where I'll be talking to you like every other week. So snap your fingers, and I'll be talking to you by the time the snapping stops.
Put a reminder on my phone, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
You got it. That's Ryan Ballingy from Yahoo and the Golf News Net Radio Network, Podcast Network, whatever you want to call it. He does a great job in the Yahoo Devil Ball Golf blog. It's your place to read all of his dispatches from Oakmont this week. Short on time. This is what's going to happen. We're going to start the Kyle DeMancourt interview. He touched on the Draymond Green suspension in this. I'm going to post the rest to SoundCloud. Go to twitter.com/jshill and my Facebook, and we will air the rest of it there. So let's start.
Time to talk the NBA Finals again. Joined on Teeing It Up by Kyle DeMancourt. Draymond Green suspended for Game 5. The Warriors up 3-1, looking to win this. I know a lot of people have thought after this that the NBA is rigged, ESPN rigged the finals, which is all BS. But look, he knew he was one flagrant away. He decided to go for the groin area for whatever reason, and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a big loss for the Warriors for tonight. Working in their favor, obviously, is that they'll be at home, and they do have a 3-1 series lead, but you really more, and I'm assuming we're going to see some most space tonight just because of his ability to play pick and roll offense, even though his defense is a liability. So it'll be interesting to see how Kerr decides to handle this. I mean, the Warriors, look, they're at home. Everybody knows how hard it is to play in that arena. You know, one win away from a back-to-back championship, so there's going to be a lot of energy, but it's going to be important for them to start the game out on a good note and not let Cleveland get any confidence going. And, you know, because if they go back to Cleveland for Game 6, I think, in my opinion, we're a little Game 7.
Yeah, me too. So let's take a step back here. I thought in Game 3, this was the LeBron James that you and I talked about, that dominates games from the first second all the way through. And Cleveland came out so dominant, so active, so ferociously defensive, with an energy level that was there that we hadn't seen all year. And then in Game 4, they got timid. And LeBron especially got timid. LeBron needs to score 42 points tonight and in Game 6 and in Game 7 and in every single playoff game he plays for the rest of his career. I don't get this timidness. Do you?
No, I mean, you're right. Game 3, Cavs came out, they played like a desperate team, which they were. I mean, that energy that they have right from the jump, they blitzed Golden State, and Golden State could never recover. And then you see in Game 4, and that was the question after Game 3, can Cleveland sustain this type of energy for the rest of the series? And, you know, that was the big question. Obviously, we saw in Game 4, they had spurts where they were playing very well. I mean, they were up 5 and then 6 after the technical, you know, after halftime, and Golden State kind of turned it up a little bit. Curry got hot. They defended well, and LeBron, yeah, he was very passive on the offensive end. I mean, look, he finished with gaudy numbers, as he usually does, but, you know, numbers don't tell the whole story. You know, the final score does. So LeBron definitely was very timid. I don't know why he feels this need to be so passive. It looked like in that game, in Game 4, Kyrie was the only one that really wanted the ball. He felt it, and for some reason, he was the only one acting like he wanted to score, and that's what LeBron needs to start doing, is acting like he needs to score. And I think, obviously, they catch a break tonight with Green being suspended. You know, personally, that whole thing should have never happened in the first place. I think at that time of that incident, the ref should have blown it dead and called a double foul. And we probably would have been talking about a suspension right now for Game 5. So, you know, LeBron, I'm not going to say he got his way with that. I'm sure he knew what he was doing, stepping over Draymond Green, probably trying to entice him to make a move. And ultimately, what happened was getting suspended. So it'll be interesting to see how LeBron responds tonight. I think he'll be aggressive. I think we'll see an aggressive LeBron. But again, we've been saying that every game, and it's not always true.
We talked about this several times during the season, that there's either two ways to beat the Warriors, one of which is to defend them so well that you prevent the surge and you keep Stephen Clay in check and you literally prevent the surge. The other way is you yourself offensively play so well that you can survive the surge. And this is why Golden State ends up in a lot of close games that are 112 to 104, because those teams played well enough to play with them and survive the surge and still be around. And in Game 4, the combination was essentially Cleveland couldn't survive the surge, and Steph finally got hot, and you knew Steph was due to get hot. And unfortunately for Cleveland, it sent them down 3-1.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's
Kyle's full answer can be seen on SoundCloud. You can go to my Facebook page, Jeremy Schilling, twitter.com/jschill, and the Teeing It Up Facebook page for the rest of Kyle's interview. We apologize for the technical issues. That is it for Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. We will see you tomorrow, same time, 6 p.m. Eastern time, for another U.S. Open preview. Have a great night. We will see you tomorrow.